You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In today's show, we're bringing in our Locked On Network Crosstown Rockets expert, host of the Locked On Rockets podcast, Ben DuBose. He knows his Texans too, so we'll get his thoughts on the Texans offseason. Just thought we'd check in with him. Welcome aboard, everybody. I'm Robert Land from the Houston Sports Talk Podcast. My co-host Brian Patterson is off for this one. Thanks for jumping on the Locked On Texans podcast. We are your best daily source of Texans news, views, and interviews. Interviews today, too, because, Ben, the Rockets are in sort of a hiatus right now, but you have the melodrama, but it might be nearing a conclusion. Are you excited about the melodrama nearing a conclusion, or has it been kind of fun for you?
I'm excited about any conclusion because it feels like it's been going on 13 months, Robert. Let's be real. this consumed all of last offseason, too. So it's one of those things. I'm intrigued to see how it turns out. I don't have that much. I don't want to say I have no hope. But I don't have visions of the stars. But at this point, you know, he's a big name. There's a buzz factor. Let's see what happens. We've talked about this for 13 months. It's just one of those subjects that at some point you get tired of going in circles about it. Let's get this done. Let's get to camp and let's see how this starts rolling.
Yeah, it seems like a lot for a mediocre, maybe basketball player these days. But I want to ask you about the Texans. Because I know you don't get a chance to talk too much about them anymore. But you've covered the Texans for years. And I really don't know what you think about this offseason. We haven't even talked about this. What did you think of what the Texans have done free agency wise in the draft? Just give me your general thoughts on where you are with the Texans right now.
Like most people, I'm optimistic based on six games of Deshaun Watson, but you're trying to keep in perspective the small sample size and the historical caveats of that. As far as the offseason, I mean, it's been somewhat quiet relative to expectations. I don't think anyone expected the Texans to be uber aggressive. But in general, I mean, the way I look at the Texans, you know, you want to see your young players, especially offensively, your position guys, Will Fuller, Deontay Foreman, the guys that are coming back, who takes a step forward. But the big question I have about the Texans, they've made a couple of patchwork signings on the offensive line, not as much of an investment as I know some wanted. But the big question is, how much of the woeful offensive line numbers from the Pro Football Focuses of the world a year ago, how much of it is legitimate and how much of it is the fact that 10 of the 16 games came with some combination of Tom Savage, TJ Yates, whoever else was in the garbage can of non-Deshaun Watson quarterbacks a year ago. After watching the Texans for pretty much their entire existence, I have come to believe, and also by that matter, the Colts, especially in the Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck eras, that a lot of the offensive line's productivity is a reflection of the quarterback, how quickly he gets rid of the football, how quick he is able to process decisions. So I'm optimistic and hopeful that with Deshaun Watson, the offensive line will be a lot better than is currently projected by some of the analytics sites. But ultimately, that going into the season is my biggest question, which is, you know, yes, they've made some decent smaller acquisitions to bolster offensive line depth, but certainly they have not hit any home runs there. So how much of the offensive line in terms of their poor numbers from a year ago are legitimate and will carry over, and how much was a product of just the disastrous quarterback situation outside of Deshaun Watson?
Of the Texans draft picks, you know, you've got Justin Reed and you've got the Jordans at tight ends, Jordan Akins, Jordan Thomas, Kiki QT at wide receiver. What player of all the Texans draft choices are you most excited about?
Reed, just simply because having watched the Texans since day one, it's been like looking for a needle in a haystack to find a safety who's capable of making plays. There have been so many that supposedly held promise. You, of course, go back to the Ed Reed, hashtag Coach Reed a few years ago. You go back to Corey Moore, in which the Texans thought they had a guy at the safety position that could be an impact player, the ball hawk, the types of just high awareness plays that it seems like teams like the Steelers and the Patriots at the top of the AFC are able to churn out, the Ravens too, although they've fallen off in recent years, every single season, whereas the Texans, it's just been a constant revolving door of at best, mediocrity. And I know you're looking at someone, the Texans did not have a first-round pick, and you're looking at someone who, as a third-rounder, you don't want to give too much expectations to on day one. But if we want to go with, like, Texans-Rockets comparables, since that's where we started this podcast, Reed, to me, almost feels like a DeAnthony Melton, the second-round pick the Rockets got out of USC, because even though Melton was a second-rounder, he was scouted so much higher than that it really feels like you got a first-round pick. And so when you're talking about Reed with the Texans, you're looking at a guy who some folks saw as high as a first-rounder. So between that and between the position rarity at a spot where the Texans, since their origin, have been historically at best mediocre and generally weak at, I'm pretty pumped. I have no idea how it's going to turn out, but just to see someone at that spot that gives you some excitement, some hope that on the back end that you can have some plays that go your way instead of just the revolving door of, you know, Eddie Pleasance and the 50 million other just treadmill of mediocrity that you can point to over the 16 years of the Texans and the safety positions. He's the guy that jumps out to me.
Who is the best Texans tight end in their history? Is it Marcus Coleman? Was it that first year of Daniel Manning?
Safety, you mean?
Yeah.
Boy, that's tough. You might go back to Marcus Coleman, honestly. That's, you know, I think back to the first years and, God, Matt Stevens was such a train wreck. But Marcus Coleman was pretty good. He might be the best. Pollard in 09 was really good. If you remember, when they got Pollard the first year, they slid him in. He was almost like and of course, he wasn't your traditional pass covering safety, but, you know, they were able to slide him in almost like an extra linebacker at times, and he made a huge impact. And then when they brought Bernard Pollard back, boy, starting in 2010, did teams really exploit him on the back end in terms of his deficiencies covering the pass. But the first year with Bernard Pollard, maybe Marcus Coleman, that's about the best I've got. And, you know, if you're grading those, you're looking at, what, a B- at best. So, yeah, it has not been a storied history for the Texans at that position.
I want to get into a little bit about how you build a roster as far as salary, because you're dealing with that all the time with the Rockets. And we'll talk about that in just a bit. Just want to remind our listeners, if you're enjoying Locked On Texans, please tell your friends, let them know they can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and most anywhere you're going to find your favorite podcast. If you'd like to check out more podcasts from our national Locked On Network, go to LockedOnSports.com, our new Locked On Network website. The Locked On Network now at 2.5 million downloads per month. We have podcasts for nearly every NFL and NBA team. Obviously, you know about Locked On Rockets, plus our national Locked On NFL Draft and Locked On NFL shows as well. It's all on LockedOnSports.com. That's LockedOnSports.com. Well, Ben, I guess the big thing with the Texans right now, the last few weeks, is we've been talking about what are they going to do with Jadeveon Clowney and the contract situation. If you were the Texans, as far as team building goes, how would you handle the Jadeveon Clowney situation? I personally would seriously think about franchise tagging Clowney over the next couple of years instead of giving him the big extension just because of his injury history. I mean, it's one of those rare things that the NFL has something like this where maybe the NBA doesn't. How would you handle it?
I would do the same thing, and I think we're probably in the minority, but the fact that he had yet another injury this offseason, it makes me a little skittish, especially considering that, of course, you've already got the big investment cost in J.J. Watt with medical questions there as well. So the idea of sinking that many millions of dollars in two guys, Watt and Clowney, that have so many medical red flags, it makes me a little bit nervous as well. In a perfect world, I think you could see him have one more healthy season and then commit, of course, you know, as we see with the Clint Capela negotiations with the Rockets, feelings do matter. So I'm not naive to the fact that if you don't do a deal now, there are obviously some difficulties to doing it later, to where the franchise tag may be the only realistic pathway. I understand that. But ultimately, in a sport like the NFL, where, you know, the cap is pretty stringent, I have a tough time putting that much into two guys with medical red flags, especially because, you know, if we're going to talk about the salary cap and the NFL, the Texans have the golden ticket, which, you know, there's been a lot written about this, but a quarterback on his rookie deal that plays at an elite level is as good as it gets, because you're getting elite level production at the most important position, yet not having to invest anywhere near the usual cost in that. So I feel like when you've got that kind of window, which you do for the next 2 or 3 years with Deshaun Watson, you have got to try and bolster the rest of your roster as much as you can. You have got to position yourself to be uber aggressive. And given that kind of wiggle room to tie up that much combined money in Watt and Clowney makes me a little bit nervous. I would like to have an exit strategy, which the franchise tag gives you. Whereas, you know, if you commit, sure, you get good vibes, you get continuity, you get chemistry, all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, there is a downside. And then when you look at how much flexibility that they theoretically could have the next couple of off seasons, given Deshaun Watson's low cap figure, then yeah, that makes me all the more wary of giving it away anywhere else.
It should remind you a little bit of the NBA, where you've got maybe a Joel Embiid and a Ben Simmons. Embiid's got the extension. He's starting to get paid big, but Ben Simmons, you've got him really cheap. So if you're the 76ers, you're in the same situation. You need to take advantage of it and go spend that money elsewhere to try to get somebody big and add to what you've got so you can win now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the rub. That's where you've got to draw a hard line if you're the executive making these decisions, is that when your window is open, you know, it's easy to sit here and say that just keep the good vibes going to roll on the side of chemistry. But windows, especially with these cheap, lower cost guys on their first contracts, they don't come around very often. It's a pretty rare situation. That's why we're drawing these parallels here. You mentioned the Sixers cross sport, and look at the NBA, how difficult that is to come by. So when you're the Texans, it's an opportunity, but you also have to keep in mind how incredibly rare that is. So for a franchise that's coming off the kind of season the Texans came off with injury questions, I think you have to be more open to external options than you would if you were coming off a season in which you had a lot more proven production, and that includes Jadeveon Clowney.
So if Nate Solder, if he would have signed with the Texans, if you would have added a few million to what you were offering Nate Solder, if you were the Texans, you might have done something like that, because this is your window, and you didn't have to give Clowney an extension this offseason.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I didn't like. Now, I've seen some good things about the guys they brought in. They're high upside guys. As I mentioned, you know, you can mount an optimistic case that Deshaun Watson will inherently improve the line a lot by himself. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen them be a little more aggressive this offseason. Now, I get that there's kind of a fine line to walk, because some of it too, you know, Watson played just 6 games, and then you have the ACL thing. So how much is 100% real? Obviously, we hope all of it, but there's a lot of wait and see to that position. But if he's legit, and I think he is, I would have liked to have seen them be a tad more aggressive, especially if, as it looks like now, they're not all that sold on giving the big deal to Clowney, based on the fact that we're, a couple of weeks away from camp, and he still doesn't have it.
Do you see a comparison with this Texans defense and what happened to the Texans defense a little bit with the Rockets, where they had the big fall off that 1 year after they got to the Western Conference final? And then, you know, you've got a new defensive coordinator, I guess, with what D'Antoni got and adding Bezdelic, and I'm going to screw that name up, I'm sure, but I think it's Bezdelic or whatever. But is there a similarity between the Texans defense and what happened with the Rockets and that sort of really bad year between the two good years?
I think you could point to that. You know, I'm optimistic. We talked about the safety position earlier, which obviously Justin Reed is a draft pick. But of course, you know, you signed Matthew. You're transitioning Kareem Jackson there. So now you have three legitimate playmakers there. You have hopefully the healthy return of J.J. Watt. You've got continuity, you know, the linebacker group. You've got McKinney on the new deal. Zach Cunningham showed you some real flashes from time to time. And so if you combine that with what we presume the healthy returns of Watt, Merciless, and Clowney, I mean, it absolutely has the potential to be a top five defense. The only concern I have is the back end. And between the three playmakers at the safety spots, between really after adding Colvin, I mean, you know, we mentioned them not being as aggressive I would like in the context of Solder, but Colvin, the guy in the slot, that's something that has plagued the Texans, almost like the Rockets, the Texans for years. So the fact is that you've upgraded the safety spots. You've got a guy you can trust in the slot. Finally, can we get a healthy season from Kevin Johnson? Ultimately, I mean, there are some really, really talented playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, it would not surprise me at all if you see that kind of a, you know, assuming there's health, knock on wood, all the usual assumptions that come with that. But assuming there's health, I mean, there's a ton of talent there.
Well, I'm going to ask you to make division predictions and Texans predictions in just a bit. And I also have maybe one other comparison between the Texans Rockets, because there is quite a few. But I just want to remind our listeners that if you haven't already, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email us at LockedOnTexans@mail.com. If you forget any of that, just go to the show description of each podcast. All of it is right there for you. And we want you and your voice to be a part of our conversation. So email LockedOnTexans@mail.com. That's LockedOnTexans@mail.com. Okay, Ben, I'm going to make just another comparison, a little Rockets-Texans. Bill O'Brien and Mike D'Antoni. One thing about both of those coaches is they've been criticized for various things, and you wonder how much in the grand scheme of things your staff is as far as what a head coach is and how good he can be. We saw with Bezdelic how he was added to D'Antoni, and all of a sudden D'Antoni was always criticized about defense, and now he's got a defense with Bill O'Brien. It makes a huge difference if he's running the offense. It makes a huge difference. It seems like maybe if Romeo is running the defense, and maybe this year they finally got somebody to run the special teams. How much do you see that when you see O'Brien and D'Antoni? And do you think both of those guys are good enough to win a championship?
I think certainly, you know, if we're making the cross Texans Rockets, D'Antoni is. As far as the Texans, I think it's going to be a prove it year for Bill O'Brien, but I'm more optimistic than I think a lot of folks are. O'Brien's someone who throughout his career, he's been a great, in my opinion, Monday through Saturday coach, or really Monday through Sunday morning coach, in that no matter what the circumstances of a season are, he never loses the locker room. Those guys will run through a wall for him, and that is very important in a league where you can see in the NFL, when a lot of seasons go sideways, you can see the effort, especially come November, December, really start to wane. I think O'Brien really has a good bond with his players. I think he's dedicated. I just believe the game management at heart is a little too old school, a little too conservative, especially for my liking. That said, one silver lining that I really took out of last year, I think the New England and Seattle games, in particular, the lack of aggression late that led both the Patriots and Seahawks to those comeback victories because O'Brien missed the chance to kind of put the foot on the throat with Deshaun Watson on the offensive side of the ball. The fact that those losses ultimately did not derail the season, to me, those can be a really powerful learning experience. We've seen sometimes in the past, I mean, if you want to use D'Antoni as an example, look how much he has evolved over the years. So we're now, the Rockets last year, one of the most isolation-heavy, slowest-paced teams in the league because that's what they needed to do to adapt. You know, it's not like you're just ramming a square peg into a round hole. So as painful as those Patriots and Seahawks losses last year were, and those were brutal because the Texans should have won those games, and they missed opportunities late because, quite simply, O'Brien took the ball out of Deshaun Watson's hands. I think it's easier to learn from it because we all know what derailed the Texans' season last year was the Watson injury. Even if you win those games, whatever, Deshaun Watson tears the ACL in practice, that's it. That's where the season ended. So in my opinion, there's no what-ifing. There's no lingering, God, we blew a golden opportunity. No, it's just easier to turn the page for everyone involved without fixating on it. And then hopefully you assume that, you know, looking back, it's a lot easier when, you know, you don't have this brutal loss to kind of learn from it. And I think that's the hope. And some of it will just be natural progression. I think part of the lack of aggression late in those games last year had to do with Watson being a rookie. In the case of the Patriots game, it was his second career start. So I understand to some degree not wanting to open up the entire playbook. I get a little bit of hesitation, but I did think it was far too conservative. It was far too inside the box, far too 20 years ago by NFL standards. And so my hope is that O'Brien learns from those experiences. And then if he does, obviously he's a very creative coach, especially with Watson in terms of the playbook. And then you mentioned Romeo Crowdell, who, you know, it's almost a perfect parallel to Jeff Bezdelic and the Rockets. So I think they've got a good defense. They've got a guy who can take care of the defense. They've got Deshaun Watson. And if O'Brien trusts him a little bit more, if he uses the Patriots and Seahawks losses as a learning experience and, you know, goes to put the foot on the throat late in games this year, then, yeah, I'm optimistic. It could be a really good year.
Yeah, you said OB was a good coach except for Sunday, but he's a better coach on Sunday than Gary Kubiak. We at least see him make he makes adjustments better than Gary Kubiak.
Yeah, okay, he makes adjustments. It's just his game day managing is a little conservative for my taste. But no, there are more adjustments than the Gary Kubiak era, that's for sure.
And the one thing I will say with a lot of these NFL head coaches, you get such a short leash, and it's not fair. We've seen Bill O'Brien improve and how he has sort of put his staff together and done a lot of things. And with these coaches, you know, Ben, you and I, first year on a job, we're not going to be perfect. We're not going to be great. And I don't think it's fair a lot of times with head coaches in professional sports that they only get, you know, a year or two to show what they can do. I mean, you got to give these guys a chance to grow.
Especially in football, because the sample size is so small. You know, that's the biggest thing when I jump from talking about basketball or baseball, the Rockets and the Astros to the Texans. Look, we're talking 16 games in the season, and now we're basically just hyper-analyzing these six games that Deshaun Watson played less than half of one season, because really that's the only comparable, because the Texans, you know, without Deshaun Watson, the whole thing is just night and day different. You know, we're trying to draw all these conclusions from these six games. Then in reality, we're breaking the six games down to two games, which are the New England and Seattle ones, the painful losses. So, yeah, that's where it is a little bit unfair to draw these conclusions. It's okay to be disappointed, but I think folks are, in many cases, premature in their evaluations because the sample size, I mean, God, look how much, you know, you can point to various things over the first couple of years of D'Antoni in Houston, of A.J. Hinch with the Astros, that they didn't do well, but ultimately there's enough sample size that you can grow from it. Whereas with football, there are so few games, and now when we're talking about Deshaun Watson, even less than half a season, that, you know, we're all just kind of blowing it out of proportion a little bit. You know, it's fair to say that there were some discouraging signs in terms of O'Brien's game management, but it's also such a small sample in the grand scheme that you can mount a very realistic case that he can turn it around and I could be on board.
I'm seeing in a couple places where the Texans are favored to win the AFC South. Who wins the AFC South in your opinion, and what do you think the Texans' final record is this year?
So I'm going to go with the homer pick. I say the Texans win it. However, I'm going to go less than I think most will pick, or I'm going to go with a lower win total that I think most division-winning predictions will have. I'm going to go 10-6. The reason that I'm saying 10-6 wins the division, I think it's going to be a lot tighter than some of the consensus predictions. I think the Colts, if Luck is able to go, are miraculously going to appear a lot more lively than what they have looked like for a lot of the past couple of seasons. I think the Jaguars and Titans, obviously looking at teams that went to the second round of the playoffs and beyond last year, there are fair questions at the quarterback positions, and especially Jacksonville. In general, I think you have four quality teams, but flawed. And ultimately, the reason I'm picking the Texans, they have the weakest schedule, and I trust Deshaun Watson more. I know that it's based on just six games as a rookie, but you know, you combine that with what we saw out of him at Clemson. You combine that with the progress they've gotten on defense, especially after adding Honey Badger, and then you add in the league's weakest schedule. I think the Texans are not without warts. I think, you know, you worry about offensively, especially at the, you know, you like the receivers with Hopkins and Fuller, but, you know, the running backs, you have Foreman coming off the Achilles. With Lamar Miller, you have sort of consistent upper-class mediocrity, I would say. The offensive line, we talked about the issues there. So it's not like they're without warts. It's not that they're a perfect team, but I think between the weak schedule, a division where I would say there's a lot of parity, and then Deshaun Watson late in games, I like the Texans. It might come down to a tiebreaker, but ultimately I'm going to side with Houston based on the weak schedule and the strength of the QB position.
You're trying to play a little bit of everything, but I see where you're going. It's at Ben DuBose. It's at Locked On Rockets. You guys, I'm sure, know this. And Ben, you're going to have the exciting Carmelo conclusion, I would assume, in the next few days.
Absolutely. And I'll be happy to have you on, and we can talk a little bit more about Carmelo next week.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. Time to wrap it up. Don't forget, my co-host Brian Patterson's got everything covered in Houston sports on houseofhouston.com, a fanside affiliate. My Houston Sports Talk podcast, easy to find on iTunes, most anywhere you listen to podcasts. Speaking of the NBA, I had my friend Stephen Sakach, who runs Lakers Nation for the big Lakers fans. It's the clutch fans, basically, of the Los Angeles Lakers fans. So go check that out. We talk about everything going on in the NBA, the Lakers, the Rockets, and all that sort of stuff. That's all we got for this one. As always, thanks for making us a part of your week.
You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.